and welcome to episode 115 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav. With me, as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, also known as Ben 304. How are you, Francisco?
I am well. How are you, Ben Chandler?
I am also well.
That's good. It is good when we are well.
Yes, being unwell is unpleasant.
That is true.
I will sip some water.
Good. I just had some delightful dessert for my dinner. That was a lot of D's. Very alliterative. I had some peanut butter cups, so I am now sugar full and ready to podcast.
Are you sure it's sugar? Is it not high fructose corn syrup?
Well, actually, it's not too much sugar because they're dark chocolate peanut butter cups, so they're not...
Dark chocolate is the superior chocolate.
I agree. But yeah, no, good. All around good. You know, just been working on Lamplight City. I showed it at an expo last night. Two nights ago. Today's Thursday.
I played the demo.
You did play the demo. Yes, I showed off that demo at... I have a nice little polished demo with voice acting and everything in it. So that's what I showed at the expo, and that's what's going to be shown at GDC Play. So that's exciting. So yeah, pretty much just working and racing towards that finish line. I'm gonna probably have beta ready for testing by this weekend, so that's fun.
What's the difference between GDC and GDC Play?
Well, GDC Play is a special section of GDC where it's basically you pay to, like, so you have places like the Indie Mega Booth, and you have the IGF, the Independent Games Festival and stuff. And there's games on display there, but those are curated via special selection and application and whatever. Whereas GDC Play is just you pay for booth space and you display there. So,
okay.
Yeah. So application systems paid for booth space, and they're going to be demoing several of their games, including Lamplight City. So that's why it's going to be there.
Splendid.
Yeah, it's cool. I've never exhibited before, so this will be a really interesting GDC, because not only will it be a first for me as far as like exhibiting a game, but there's also several people that I know that are going to GDC for the first time, so it'll be fun to kind of see and kind of, I don't know, sort of vicariously experience the wonders of GDC again now that I've grown old and jaded with the whole process.
Do you think it'll be more... Do you think it'll be more of an energy drain and probably less fun, the fact that you're exhibiting?
No, because I don't have to... I'm not required to be at the booth at all hours.
Oh, right. That's cool.
I can just buy whenever I want, and if there's, like, interviews or whatever, there's a lounge right around the corner to sit at, but it's not like I'm required to be there the whole time, so I get to enjoy the conference on my own time, so... Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it'll be good. Whereas if I had been in the IGF or whatever, then I would have to man the booth by myself, and that would be...
Right.
That would be a big difference, so...
Yeah, I've heard people that run booths by themselves at cons say that it's a lot of work.
It is. I don't envy the people who do it. So, anyway. That's me. Anything interesting of note for you?
Not really. I've had lots to do lately. I'm getting ready with my band for another show. So lots of practice. Mm-hmm. Been playing lots of role-playing games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any good ones?
Yes. All good ones.
I guess I meant that more along, like, rather than like, hey, are there any bad ones that you played? I meant more like, are there any particular standouts that you'd like to mention?
Well, I finished Might and Magic 7, which was good.
Did you finish that ages ago?
Well, January.
Well, yeah.
We don't podcast very often.
Well, not anymore. Anyway.
And because I finished 6 when I was at your place, so that must have been October, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I kind of put off playing another one, and then I was playing Starcrawlers, and the procedural generationness of it was getting to me. I was like, oh, I need to play something old and handcrafted. So I played Magic 7 and
Okay.
finished that. And then kind of went on a RPG kick. I played through and enjoyed Dark Sun and Shattered Lands, then played through and enjoyed Lands of Lore, the Throne of Chaos. All of those are good. In the meantime, I tried Isha, The Legend of the Fortress, and that is a hard game to get into, as are all Silmarils games.
Oh.
And currently I'm playing, well, not currently, not right now, I'm working, but in
Hey,
my...
me too.
In my current sessions, I'm playing Gravenloft Strahd's Possession, which is also very hard to get into, unfortunately, because I really like other Dreamforge games, but this one's just... I don't know if it's the engine's a bit weaker or the graphics aren't quite as good, or... I think just as the starting design in this is quite challenging, and in a runaway a lot kind of way. So anyway, I'm getting it. I haven't even been to a dungeon yet, and that's probably the thing that's, worrying me the most, because I like dungeon crawling. Anyway, so yeah, that's well, my fascinating life.
I see. Well, as long as we briefly resurrected this former section of our intros, I've been playing The Witness, as you know.
The Witness is good.
It is good. I've really enjoyed it so far. I put it down. I haven't picked it up since the last time I told you about it, because I feel like I've gotten to a point where things are going to change now, and I need to approach it with the right level of patience.
Yeah, I think it's one of those games too that if you rush through it, you're not going to enjoy it. Like if you get frustrated with the puzzle, the best thing to do is to just walk away for a bit and come back.
Yeah.
Rather than being like, oh, I've got to solve this right now, because
that's kind of what happened to me on my last playthrough. Because I was like, it was more than I finally discovered a bunch of new stuff, and I was like, oh, I can do this now. Oh, I can do this now. Oh, and then before I knew it, I was inside the mountain, and I was like, well, guess I went through all of this stuff.
Yeah, and I think it is kind of a... I don't want to say too much to like spoil anything for listeners that haven't played it, because it's a game that if you spoil it, it would really ruin the experience, I'm sure, because the joy of that game is trusting yourself to be able to solve those puzzles, and the act of solving them is extremely satisfying. But
In most cases, anyway.
In most cases, yeah. There's a few that I... You know, I think there's moments, there's a little moment that I know you got stuck on that I didn't get stuck on, and there's a moment that I got stuck on that you might not have got stuck on that took me ages to solve, just because I didn't notice one little tiny... It's always a little tiny thing.
Yeah, I'm curious actually to talk about that after we finish podcasting, because if it's a bit that I've already experienced, then I'd be curious to hear about it. Anyway.
But yeah, so I think... It is a kind of natural point, because the 11th laser that you activate, presumably being the town, but I'm sure you could, is really does feel like a combination of everything that's come before.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. And then, you're like, well, what's going to come next?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And then the mountain comes.
And then the man comes, you're like, oh, well. really?
Yeah, I already felt that, and I only went one puzzle in. And I was like, yeah, I need to take a break from this for a while.
Yeah. But, like, I think that's the interesting thing about The Witness, not to give anything away. But it's a game that at first you're like, oh, this is going to be something really philosophical and everything like that. And then it's like, no, it's not.
I mean, it does have really it's not, but it does have some very pseudo philosophical things in as far as like the quotes. But
oh yeah, but I digress. That's nothing to do with anything.
Sure.
Like in terms of like actually playing the game.
Right.
Playing the game itself and experiencing the game itself is very much solve puzzles.
Right.
And it doesn't ever try to be anything more than that. And I really admire it for that.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I was like, there's going to be some point where I'm going to do some, malarkey.
Malarkey.
To keep this PG.
yes.
And like, it's seven puzzles. Like, and that's all it needs to be, and I really admire it for that.
Yeah. Anyway, cool.
We have a topic.
We do have a topic.
You have a topic.
What?
You have a topic which I found out about early
Yes,
this morning.
which I suggested. Well, it was way early this morning. It was did you
Yeah, but
did you sleep between then and now at all?
I did, yes.
Okay, good. So it was last night for you.
No.
It was like 2 o'clock in the morning for you.
I know, and I had gotten up and was doing some work.
Right, and then you went to sleep, and then anyway, doesn't matter. Yes, I do have a topic. I've been thinking a lot about these two topics, and I feel like they're sort of related, so I want to talk a little bit about both of them on this podcast.
I don't feel like they're super related, but I don't think they're also big enough topics to be like, this is its
Well,
own thing.
yeah, they're not big enough topics, I think, to dedicate an entire podcast to, but I think that they share some threads in.
Well, they're both about character.
Yes, exactly. So
That's about it, but yeah.
I'm going to present my hot take first, and that's what the kids say nowadays, right? Hot take, that's like an unpopular opinion.
Do you want to do that bit first? Because that
What?
one's harder to talk about than
Yeah, sure,
the.
let's get it out of the way first.
Okay.
I mean, not get it out of the way. I don't think it's harder to talk about. I just
Let's do
think.
it. Let's do it justice first.
Okay. So the kids these days, hot takes, unpopular opinions. This is my hot take. I think that when you have a protagonist in an adventure game, in any narrative game, really, but since we're an adventure game podcast, we're talking about adventure games. If you have a protagonist, you can either have a well-defined personality-wise, you can have a very well-defined, nuanced protagonist, or you can have linearity in your story, but you or I'm sorry, non-linearity in your story, which is by that I mean obviously, choices that affect the outcome of the story, but you can't have both. And the reason I feel that way is because I feel that if you have a player character who is obviously you're interactive, it's an interactive character, you're controlling this character, you are inhabiting the shoes of this character. I mean, you could also bring up the discussion of in an adventure game, are you, depending on the game, are you supposed to feel like you are this character, or are you supposed to feel like you're just directing this character's actions? But I feel that if you have an interactive character and they have a particularly defined personality, such as, such that certain actions would be completely out of character for them, and the game allows you to do those actions, then you get into the whole territory of ludonarrative dissonance. And so, why are you giggling? Is it because I'm
Because
using big words?
no, it's because people can't say ludonarrative dissonance these days without it being like a comedy thing.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm sorry. It finally had to come around on our podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've probably discussed it before, but anyway, sorry, go on.
Well, I mean, just to cite an example that I already cited to you, but I'll give to our audience because you bring it up fairly often and with good reason, is Niko Bellic in GTA 4. In previous GTA games, and obviously these are GTA games, but they are to a point narrative games because they have a story. You had in GTA 3, you had Claude, who was a silent protagonist, so he
He
basically.
literally has no character.
Exactly, he has absolutely no character. He's just your avatar in this game world. He takes the missions. He doesn't do anything particularly characteristic. He's your shoes in
Yeah.
this world, right? And then you
He has the
have.
most bare bones backstory imaginable.
Exactly. And then you have Tommy Vercetti, who is a psychopath, and he's a self-proclaimed psychopath and killer and whatnot. So,
Well, in not just self-proclaimed, like the game sets him up at the start
well,
as
that
like this
too.
is who he is, and then he
Exactly.
accepts that that's who he is, and like,
Sure.
and f for me, he's the strongest character just because of the fact that his story matches the gameplay just perfectly. Like
Exactly.
you do all this stuff, and it's like, well, that's who he is. He's the butcher. So
And
yeah.
exactly, and yeah, and I mean, it's not like the game gives you, like, the game, you can play it peacefully, I guess, or as a pacifist, I guess, by like, if you drive and you don't run over anybody. But the missions all involve you killing people, and
Yeah.
that's the game, and that's what Tommy does, and that's fine. And then it started getting a little iffy with CJ in San Andreas.
Oh, he's a nice guy, by the way. Because, he killed 100 people.
Yeah, exactly. And especially more so with Nico in GTA 4, because Nico is this complex, haunted character who's tormented by all the terrible things he did in the war. And he is, you know, he tries to be a good guy, and he's come to the United States to hopefully, you know, start over and have a clean slate and rebuild his life and whatever.
And then he's killing guys in seconds.
Exactly. And he's murdering all these people. And then you get the moral choices, which you think are ridiculous because you've mowed down everybody. And then at the end, you have the choice to kill the guy or not. And that just is completely out of character. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it comes back to the stupid thing where not the real issue, but one of the issues is there's only so much you can do with a game. There's limited man hours, there's limited resources, and, you know, if you look at stuff like, I think Peter Molyneux has tried to some extent with projects like the Fable series to make your character's character a result of their actions, but anybody that's played Fable knows that that was only successful in a fairly sort of, you know, surface level sort of way. You know, it's more superficial than anything else, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your actions certainly do have consequences to some extent, but not really broad reaching narrative consequences.
Sure.
I think it's important also to be like, to keep in mind that there's different forms of linearity, and that, you know, not everything is like make this big story decision.
Right.
Someone's just like, well, are you going to play this as a thief or a wizard? And that can, you know, that can, stuff like, you know, we were talking about Quest for Glory and that sort of thing in terms of adventure games or pseudo-adventure games, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's a difficult topic to talk about because the minute you say you can't, someone will prove you wrong.
I welcome someone to prove me wrong because I'd like to believe that I can be proven wrong, because as far as I can tell, like, one of the biggest struggles that I have, I feel, and I have had in the past is creating protagonists that are interesting, I guess you could say, for lack of a better word. Like, my particular feeling and design theory for adventure games is that your protagonist should have some form of blank slateness to them so that you as the player can insert yourself into their shoes and you can make decisions for them and you can play the character as you feel that the character would, you know, make decisions or whatever if they're faced with decisions. I think that it's important to give characters at least some kind of base personality traits or, you know, defining characteristics. You know, even if it's something as simple as this character is brave or this character is loyal or this character is dishonest, things like that. But as far as, like, you know, would they kill somebody? I mean, I think if you set out by saying this character, if you establish that the character has an aversion to killing people, like Batman, for example, but then in the course of the gameplay, you have a scene where the character kills somebody. I mean, obviously, if that happens, you would have to be mindful of that. And, you know, if you want to stick with the character's feelings, then obviously the character would react to that somehow. But if it's just a case of like, oh well, I killed somebody, no big deal, then again, that's jarring because that's out of character.
Well, again, that comes down to ludonarrative dissonance.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, but that's the thing too, like, if you don't deal with it straight on, then, and if it just becomes part of the gameplay, which is, you see more in stuff like, you know, your GTAs and your open world games and stuff like that, one would hope that in adventure games they do deal with those issues. But yeah, like, I was thinking about characters from old Sierra games and, like, you know, Guybrush Threepwood. you know his motivations. They're very simple motivations. In the first game, he wants to be a pirate, and then he wants to rescue the governor. And then in the second game, he wants to find the treasure. And then in the third game, he wants to break the curse, and so on and so on. And, you know, Guybrush isn't a very complex or nuanced character.
In the fourth game, he wants to stop an Australian.
Well,
I think we can all relate
to that one.
Yes.
Anyway, you know, Guybrush isn't a particularly nuanced character, but he's still a memorable character because of the situations he finds himself in and the other characters that he interacts with. And so I think that, yeah, basically what it boils down to is it's important to have good NPCs in your world, in your adventure game, to sort of have the main character bounce off of and react to.
It's kind of interesting because... Yeah. And I'm worried that we're gonna like dip too deeply into your second topic, so I guess they are related.
See, I told you.
But I don't consider really someone like Guybrush Threepwood as a character.
No,
they don't have. He doesn't really have a life. Guybrush is a series of recurring gags to me.
Okay, but he is a character. Sense. He's the main character of a series of games, and people
but
love
a character...
Guybrush.
But he really has no character.
Exactly. He doesn't have a character, but, you know, he's still there, you know? Like King Graham.
Yeah, but...
King Graham doesn't have any personality. He's just, according to Roberta Williams, he's buff, and he's a hero. And that's all really we know about him.
Right, but in terms of character development or character building...
Oh, sure.
You know...
Yeah, no, there is none.
I think it's because the fact that the games were interactive, they're like, well, the experience isn't getting to know this character and like seeing them grow and everything like that. It's like you exploring the world as yourself. And I really feel, especially in adventure games and especially in early adventure games, going on to talk about NPCs just for a little bit, is that there really were very few characters, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, too.
There were objective givers, and that's, you know, and joke givers. And that's kind of, you know, for a lot of the cases, just like, well, give me a character that I'll remember beyond the funny jokes. You know, I like it when Meat Hook makes his tattoo talk.
Sure.
And the fact that he's got a parrot. Spoilers. But
right. If that's a spoiler for anybody, you're listening to the wrong podcast.
But yeah, nothing happens really in a Monkey Island game.
But that's the thing. I think that the whole concept of character growth and development and, like, you know, well-developed characters in adventure games, I think that's really a very modern concept because...
Well, sure, because we've got more storage space and so we can have big story moments.
Exactly. And
we don't have to fit it onto four floppy disks.
Well, I don't think it's just that, but I mean... I think, you know, one of the first real adventure games of that era that actually, you know, tried to tell a more mature adult story was Gabriel Knight. And, you know, say what you will.
For a very specific take on mature and adult, yeah. But, I mean, I think...
yeah, but, I mean, Gabriel Knight was an example of a main character who had a pretty defined personality, but the game was designed... The puzzles and stuff are designed to, you know, they work within Gabriel's character. And
well, I think looking earlier than Gabriel Knight, Loom probably had a go at doing the same sort of thing.
I guess. Yeah, Loom
Loom is definitely more directed narrative than something like Monkey Island, where you're like, you're running around. It's like, yeah, you've got to save the girl, but, well, you know, you do these three quests and then, you know, oh, the thing happened. Whereas Loom is, like, sort of narrative moments one after the other in fairly rapid succession.
Although I would say that in Loom, the world and the lore take, precedence to the characters. Because, I mean,
sure.
There's characters, but...
Bobbin isn't super developed.
No, Bobbin's not really developed at all. I mean...
Just don't look at his face. That's
right.
All you get.
That's exactly. That's the, like, one bit of mystery that he has. But, you know, you meet some interesting characters, but you don't really know too much about them. I mean, Rusty is interesting, but you don't really know too much about him. And I feel like, yeah, it's the world is what's the star of the show. But even still, Loom was still not. There was death in Loom, and there was the apocalypse, and
There's like four graveyards in them.
well, that's true. But and there's a pretty gory on-screen death, which is great animation. Yeah, it's a pretty standard high fantasy story.
I don't think it's a high fantasy game. I think it's more of like a fairy tale folktale.
I guess.
I don't know that have experienced enough high fantasy to comment
Probably
on high
not.
fantasy.
Probably not.
Yeah. I would never call Loom high fantasy.
Okay.
It
Well.
has too few trappings of the genre.
Well, maybe that's a good thing. But yeah, so like the thing too is what was I going with this? I lost my train of thought because I'm drawing for once while we podcast. Basically just that yeah, if you have a character who I guess it also depends excuse me, it depends on their character types and personalities. Like I brought this up as an example. Like I know that in the first Blackwell game there's the bit where Rosa is too shy to speak with Nishanti in the park, and you have to solve the puzzle in order to get her attention. And that works within Rosa's character because it's established that she's shy, she's socially awkward, so it makes sense that she wouldn't just barge up to her like all other adventure game characters and just start talking. And
Yeah, people don't
that's
just start
interesting.
talking to
Yeah.
other people.
But I also know on the other side of the coin, I know people who were frustrated by that because it was like, well, this is an adventure game. I should be able to talk to her. Like, it's stupid that she's so. But
Well, that is a stupid response. I'm
yeah,
gonna say that
well,
right now. That's a pathetic response to anything. So there.
well, excuse me. But
Well, you can't just say, "Well, this is an adventure game. I should be able to do this." That's
well, that wasn't necessary. Okay.
limiting the genre beyond measure.
Yeah, so maybe I inserted that myself, but I remember one person specifically saying that they felt frustrated by the fact that Rosa, they wanted to talk to this person, but Rosa was too shy, so there was a disconnect there between player and character. But that's fine because again, this
Well,
is an instance of a particularly defined personality trait of this character.
sure, and I never do a thing in a game that I would do in real life ever.
Right.
I
Well,
love Doom, but I don't walk around with a shotgun blasting like zombies.
right.
Or, sorry, whatever the
Really,
soldiers that have been.
you've never played an open world game like GTA or something and like followed traffic rules or anything like
Yeah, for like a minute, and I'm like, oh, I do this in real life. This is boring. I'm gonna smash shit.
that?
I mean, I like driving around listening to music in GTA when I didn't have a license and a car, but as soon as I got a license and a car, I just go driving in real life
Right.
with
Okay.
music on. I was like, oh, I don't need a game to do this. This is great. There's breeze now.
Yeah. You could just play with a fan in front of you.
Yeah, so like so
Anyway,
so
yeah.
me, the whole point of playing a game is to experience things outside of my sort of realm of possibility. And, you know, being socially awkward in New York City wasn't something I had access to at the time.
Right. Now you do, but
Now I do.
yeah.
But
Yeah,
yeah, so like
so
it frustrates me that people don't see that character trait of Roses as being a thing, but I'm used to, I guess, role-playing games in which your character's limitations become a part of
right, and I mean
the.
Rosa, obviously her character develops over the course of the series, so
Sure,
that's an
she goes from I won't talk to a woman in the park to I'm gonna headbutt a cop, although obviously that's not her,
Exactly. Well, yeah,
you know,
but
but
you know, spoilers.
still.
But yeah, I mean, same thing can be said for Gabriel Knight. I mean, he goes from being—I mean, he doesn't. His basic personality doesn't change too much because he's still kind of like a womanizing jerk by the third game. But he goes from being just a sort of lazy bum writer to doing his job and or his traditional family job and taking it seriously.
Hang on. When does Gabriel Knight ever write anything?
Well, he's writing his book. He writes the books between games because at the
Right,
beginning
so.
of Gabriel Knight 2, he's written his experience is he's written a book about his experiences in Gabriel Knight 1, and in Gabriel Knight 3, he wrote a book about his experiences in Gabriel Knight 2. So,
Okay. That checks out then.
yeah.
But yeah, I think Gabriel Knight is possibly more interesting by virtue of the people he's surrounded with than by himself.
Sure, but that goes to what I was saying too about that it's important to have important or NPCs around to for the player character to bounce off of.
Sure. I mean, that's unless we're going very much a first person narrative and a
Yeah.
soul searching journey, it's a pretty dull set of character development if it's just a guy on an island with a volleyball.
Right. Well, no one's gonna make Castaway the game. Actually, someone did make one. Tom Hanks away. That was a Mags game. But
That doesn't
another
surprise
character I
me.
wanted to talk about because I think it's a fairly she's a fairly unique character in her presentation as well as her development. What? Why are you laughing?
Nothing. Go on.
No, what?
Nothing.
I don't believe you, but okay.
It's true, there was something, but I'm not going to cover it now. Go on.
Fine. Anyway, April Ryan.
Yeah, and we discussed this before, and I sort of made the comment that April's probably more complex or interesting, at
Well, the
least,
thing
than
that's
Zoe.
interesting, yeah, definitely. The thing that is interesting about April and the thing that I think is unique about April is that we start off playing as April and we start off playing as her in her day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And, you know, things start getting weirder, and then she goes on this longest journey. But the cool thing is, I mean, at least the reason I thought it was cool, I don't know if anybody else did or if anyone else could relate, but like I played the longest journey when I was in college, and so the fact that like April is this college age girl living in this big city, and it's this big exciting city, and she lives in this cool house with cool friends, and she has, you know, she goes to a cool school, and you know, she has a pretty good life. And it's a case where you actually really want to be April in a sense. Like, I thought it was cool. I was like, I'm in college too, and I think this is cool. I'd love it if I went to like a liberal arts college and I could just hang around and go to this cool thing and whatever. I don't know. It felt like a life that would be fun to have, I guess.
Okay.
And
I never really had that, but I think what interested me about April is the fact that you start off playing as her and you see this whole thing happen, and then by the time you sort of encounter her again in Dreamfall, she's become this figure who's grown beyond what she was in The Longest Journey. She becomes, I guess, an icon of
One of my
sorts.
favorite things about Dreamfall was seeing how everything that we had seen in The Longest Journey and how all the characters had changed and
Yeah,
how Charlie
and
had gone from like this, you know, the idealist, "Hey girl, I want to be a dancer," to "I wanted to be a dancer. What was I thinking?" And Emma had become a successful sculptor, and April was April.
and the fact that you had that gap, and it's something that I mentioned very early this morning about Technobabble, where I think Regis is made more interesting and complex by the fact that we don't play him half the time. So he's able to do things that we don't see him doing, and that probably makes him more intriguing and interesting because we weren't there and weren't, a lot of adventure games is doing things in the most sort of bland way, like, oh, you're a great hero, but you're doing it because you made cookies or whatever, Whereas if
Don't bring
someone
still
does
life
something
into this, please.
But if somebody does something outside of that and you haven't seen it, there's an air of sort of mystery to it and sort of excitement because you weren't there doing the boring thing yourself, so it seems really interesting. Much like drawing seems really fascinating, and then 8 hours later you're still poking away at one leaf and it's like, well, this actually isn't very interesting.
Don't
So
remind me.
I think that space, and when I think of books that I like, because I'm better at liking characters from books, honestly. And I said this very early this morning that if you need to stop sort of comparing them with literary characters, which are usually much more interesting, in order to appreciate any complexity of a game character. But if I think about books with characters that I like, the thing that perhaps builds them up to being characters that I like is the gaps between when they, or the gaps in my knowledge of that character where something comes out that surprises me about them, So if you're doing the whole thing the whole time, you're very rarely surprised by a character's reaction to something, unless,
Unless you have an
unless.
unreliable narrator situation like in Resonance, where,
Right.
yeah.
Yeah, and that is a pretty powerful thing, but again, that is a gap in the knowledge. And of course, we brought up Planescape Torment and the fact that the guys
Oh.
made interesting, but possibly the most interesting things that happened to the main character of that game happened long before we ever encountered him.
Sure.
So yeah, I think that having a character exist outside of the parts that we play is very important. At the same time, I don't think that means that you can't add non-linearity in a way that will not reduce their complexity. I
You
just
have to
think it's
be, I think you just have to be very careful with how much freedom you give the player in your non-linearity. Because again,
Oh,
if
sure, you'd
you,
never finish your projects, but
well, no, I just mean like if the if you establish that, like at the example I gave before, if you establish that your character is averse to using guns, for example, you're not going to have your character pick up a gun and fire it unless you want to use that as some sort of character building moment or conflicting moment or something like that.
right, if you're introducing a conflict, it has to be given, you have to acknowledge that as a conflict within the system.
Sure.
Otherwise, it becomes a contradiction, not a conflict.
Exactly. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think, like I say, I think you can't say you can't do this because someone will come along and go, well, here's someone that did it, and I look forward, the more.
Well, please, if anybody knows of any examples of a well-done, very complex, very nuanced player character in a game, an adventure game, that allowed for a lot of non-linearity and a lot of player choice, please let me know because I definitely would like to
I have the same request except without the second half.
know.
'Cause not to be facetious or anything like that, but I can't think of a very complex character within any game. Games haven't really got to that point yet,
Yeah.
So yeah, do you want to cover our second topic?
Yes, because one thing I've noticed as well in one route that certain games take as far as ways in which they give their character a particular personality or a set of traits is a very easy, in my opinion, route to go, which is making your character an asshole. And I can think of, I don't
Oh my
have my
God.
apples! That's a reference only you
No
get.
one's gonna get that.
I don't care. You got
I
it,
know.
that, and you laughed, and that's all I care about. Anyway, yeah,
So.
if. Huh?
So.
So yeah, there I can name several adventure game protagonists that are assholes. But there's also another thing in which that there are adventure game protagonists who aren't necessarily assholes, but that the gameplay and the puzzles force you to be an asshole. And I mean, if you boil down most of the typical adventure game tropey type puzzles, like your distraction puzzles, your stealing puzzle, taking inventory items. Most of the stuff you do in adventure games is not very nice to other people. And there's certain adventure games where you actively do horrible things to other people. And I have to wonder why that is. And I mean, you gave me a very simple answer, but
I
before we
think.
get into that simple answer, I want to do some shaming and call outs. Let's take, for example, Monkey Island 2. Like, Guybrush is...
Yeah, nailing Stan into a coffin. Yeah, I really like that bit because Stan is a pain in the ass, but that's a horrible thing to do.
Well, yeah, that's a horrible... I mean, it's a comedy game, so you get away from it, get away with it in the context of it's a comedy game. But seriously, in real life, if you nailed somebody into a coffin just because they were annoying, that's terrible. Guybrush also gets a guy fired from a kitchen by putting a live rat in a soup. He steals everything from everybody. He saws a guy's peg leg off. He lets a crocodile loose in public. All the things on the wanted
in
poster.
A public competition.
Yeah, he cheats. You could say, hey, okay, he's a pirate. Pirates were bad guys. Okay, yeah, sure.
But, yeah, so he's got that basically as an excuse.
I guess. But yeah.
I mean, he'd be a pretty terrible pirate if he just
true. If he
just weeded old ladies' gardens all day.
Yeah, it's true.
The whole point, I think, of Monkey Island to some extent is that the pirates in that game are mostly terrible.
Yeah.
Not very good. I mean, they can sword fight and insult a bit, but in terms of being actual pirates, they're all scared of this one.
I mean, if Monkey Island was a pirate simulator adventure game and you had to do the things that most real-life pirates did, it would be rated adults only, so there's that. But
yeah, but
also...
I think there's a couple of things, to go into. One of them is that games, especially at that time, had characters to exist as obstacles to our progress.
Yeah.
They were the means by which we interacted with the world, in terms of adventure games anyway. So if you see a character, they've either got a throwaway funny conversation, or they've got some obstacle to our progress. I want to get the thing. In order to get the thing, you have to do this for me. Or in order to do the thing. So a lot of the times, dealing with a character means overcoming an obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
That naturally lends itself to accidentally putting some asshole moments.
Right.
Another thing, and you brought this up before, is that people think that being an asshole is funny.
Right.
You only have to look at popular culture to go, well, that's obviously the case. If people are making a comedy thing, a lot of the times they'll just have someone being an asshole. It's funny to see someone doing things you shouldn't do, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if it's a sort of escapist fantasy thing of like, oh, in this game I can do the stuff I would never do in real life.
Yeah.
Like,
and
I remember when I was telling my cousins about Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, and there's the bit at the beginning where you're talking to the guy, the bouncer, at Madame Sophia's show in New York. And they thought that it was like the most hilarious thing, and that it was so cool that you could say to him, oh, you could like call him a dumb ape. And of course that leads to you fighting him. But they thought that that was like, the fact that that was a dialogue choice in a game, they thought it was like the most amazing thing ever. Because, that's not something, I guess, that at the time you would really expect to see in a game like that.
I guess. That's Indiana Jones is clearly, his character's fairly well defined from the films anyway.
Sure.
If you look at, what are billed as comedy adventures from the 90s, you've got stuff like Simon the Sorcerer, where Simon is very clearly a selfish brat.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. I hated Simon in Simon the Sorcerer 2. Like, he was...
Yeah, because he's not a nice guy.
Right, he was okay. Like, he wasn't great, but he was tolerable in 1. But in 2, it was just like... I hated him. I didn't want to play as him because I hated him.
I have less patience for Simon 1 now. Well, because I replayed it earlier last year. Mm. And, I found this time around that the amazing graphics didn't distract me from him so much. And, Simon isn't much of a character, to be honest.
No, he's really not.
He's just a British kid. Mm. And he just,
who's voiced by a very old-sounding man.
Well. But yeah, it's like... I guess that seemed funny. I don't really find Simon the Sorcerer funny anymore. But when I was younger, I thought it was funny that... Well, I think Simon revels a little bit in the tragedy, especially the guy in the swamp.
Oh,
that,
God.
Just wants a friend. And, you feel bad for, guy's... It's terrible. But...
That's the most depressing thing ever. I hate the swampling because, Well, first of all, the Swamp Thing is annoying. But second of
Yeah,
all,
but
he's the most pathetic, sad, depressing character I've ever seen in any adventure game.
yeah,
And
it's
Simon's
sad
just
to
a
deal with a
nasty.
father figure.
No one's gonna get that right.
I think some people
Yeah,
that have
maybe.
listened
Anyway.
to this podcast. But yeah,
Yeah.
I think like, that was seen as funny, and a lot of the
Right.
times the comedy games, I don't think we had. I mean, if you look at Day of the Tentacle, you've got like Laverne, who's just, she's not a sort of, she's a bit imbalanced, and that's, she does horrible things to cute fuzzy animals. You're like, oh, that's
Not really, though. She
I've,
puts a hamster in a microwave.
yeah,
And
but she's
she.
always, well, think about the very intro.
Well, yeah, I guess.
So that's like
Well, she
that's
says dissection, not vivisection, at least.
yeah, but come on, dude.
I'm just
But
trying
like,
to excuse her because I like Laverne.
well, I like Laverne too.
Yeah.
I think she's a great character. And I genuinely think she's funny.
Yeah.
But like, but that's where her character comes from. Like, she
Right.
sees a cute fuzzy animal and her brain goes straight to, I want to chop it up,
Right.
and that makes her funny and memorable, and I think a lot of the times, if you look at Sam and Max, for example, they're not normal police officers.
Well, they're not.
Aside from the fact that they're, well, te detectives, I should say. Aside from the fact that they're, no, they're freelance police.
Yeah. They're
Aside from the
freelance
fact
police.
they're a dog and a rabbit,
Yes, there is that glaring fact.
but like, they're clearly, they're not balanced characters in terms of being able to exist normally in society. But then again, none of the other people around them are either.
Well, but that's the thing too. They're the only animals in their world.
Well, the only, no, they're not. The cat at the start talks.
I guess that's true. They're the only large animals in their
Oh,
world.
come on.
I mean,
Well,
there's the
there's
Mole-Man.
technically a talking mammoth.
That's true. And a Bigfoot. And a giraffe named Goyle from Scranton.
Trixie, every time I fly
I just
over
wanted
the
to
middle,
say. I know.
every time I fly over the middle of the US, I look on the map for Scranton, and
Yeah,
it
I
gives
know.
me delight every
Well,
time.
it's only one state over.
It is. But yeah,
Anyway,
so I
yes.
think like the characters that weren't very well balanced,
Yeah.
and Sierra, I guess, had some more balanced characters by, in some cases, pulling from history with, King Arthur
And Robin Hood, yeah.
and even Gold Rush really pulls from history to have his, like,
Sure.
Jared Wilson's motivations come directly from a historical event,
Well, yeah, sure.
but then someone like Leisure Suit Larry is clearly just,
Well.
some unlucky guy just, getting ahead. And the games, I think the game's narration is probably in worse taste than Larry. Like, Larry always feels like a puppet at the mercy
Oh,
of,
yeah.
he never really feels like his own character.
Well, I mean, Al Lowe basically has said in interviews that his favorite part of designing the Leisure Suit Larry games was always thinking about all the horrible situations that he could put Larry in. So
Right. So
it's
yeah,
really
you're not.
just, yeah.
So I think
It's.
Sierra games are probably less inclined to be that way than like Simon the Sorcerer or anything. I think LucasArts games started getting a bit more nuanced later on. Like The Dig, they weren't being assholes for comedy for the most time. They were sort of riffing off each other and stuff like that.
Kind of, but it was a much more serious tone than any of the other ones. I think the reason too is that LucasArts games actually gave you dialogue options, whereas the Sierra games, whenever you would talk to anyone, the character would say stuff. You didn't get a choice in what the character would say, so.
So you're not really guiding the interaction.
Right.
And like Quest for Glory, as we talked about, you've got a pretty blank slate hero
Sure.
that's like, oh, it's a hero's quest. Like, you,
And that was
I
actually one of
don't.
the first games that gave you the options to, like, you could type ask about
Right.
things. So you had very
Well,
more specific guided
in terms
conversations.
of adventure games, yeah.
Sure.
But yeah, it's interesting that, in terms of games being assholes, you do have to remember, like I said, that at that point, the characters in the world were mostly either someone that wanted something from you in exchange for something else, or just a throwaway interaction to like make the world feel like a more fleshed out place. So again, if you're overcoming an obstacle, at some point you're gonna betray someone's confidence or go behind their back, or you know. And I think designers and writers both are more mindful of that now than they were back then, perhaps. And also our goals are different, you know. It's interesting with something like Kyrandia 2, Hand of Fate, because I know when Dave played it, he was like, oh, none of this makes any sense. And I'm like, it wasn't trying to be anything more than just a cute adventure game, I don't think, you know. There's a bit of a story there, but nothing really major. And if you compare it to Lands of Lore, the Throne of Chaos, which I recently finished, which I believe came out the same year, Lands of Lore tells a much more cohesive narrative than Kyrenia 2. Kyrenia 2 is like, it's got kind of a narrative, but
Yeah, I mean, I always felt
it's
that the
just exploring this cute fantasy world to
Yeah,
me.
I always felt like the Kyrandia games were like glimpses into this story, 'cause the intro to Kyrandia points at, like, there's recurring characters from the first Kyrandia, like Darm and all that. But
Well, and Malcolm.
well, Malcolm only shows up at the very end, but yeah, so like, but there's when they're introducing the thing, it's like, oh, all the mystics gathered, and they introduce Marco and the Hand, and the way they present him, it's like, even Marco and the Hand were like, this and this. So it's like, they present them as characters that you should already know, but you don't. And that was one thing that I always found kind of off-putting about Kyrandia, although I realized that it's really not about the characters and not about establishing the lore or anything like that. It's just you're playing this game and you're in this character in this thing. Like, even in Kyrandia 1, when you're walking around as Brandon, there's that bit at the beginning where there's that character, I forget what the name is. I think it's
Oh, with the
Meryl.
bridge.
No, it's this kid, and he's like, oh, you're chasing me, and Brandon's like, I'm not chasing you. And once you actually do have to like follow him, and then he gives you something or something, I forget. But like, who is that guy? We never learned who he is. Brandon knows him. He's some
Well,
kid,
even
but
when you go to the bridge that needs to be fixed, he knows the guy. Like they talk as if
oh,
they've known
Herman,
each other for a while.
yeah.
But I mean,
And that's fine
that.
because you have characters in games that they you
Sure.
meet,
I mean,
they know
Brandon's lived
people.
in that world his whole life. It
Exactly,
makes
sure.
sense that he knows those people. It'd be weird if he didn't.
Sure, but yeah.
And I think that's something that Sebastian said to me when I was making Airwave, is that he had a character that has lived in this world this whole her whole life, and yet she'd walk past someone and they'd never say anything to her. And he's like, that's so weird. If I'm walking around my hometown and I walk past someone, like, oh, hey, man, did you see the thing on the weekend? So we added that on purpose to be like, well, you know, this character knows these other characters to give it a bit more granularity.
Sure.
And I mean,
And
honestly, adventure games rarely suffer from that because you're rarely in your hometown. You know, I guess Rincewind is to an extent, but
I guess, but
he's a fucking.
Rincewind's not the type that would know everybody in Ankh-Morpork. He keeps to
Right.
himself in the university,
He's not
but
Captain Carrot. But yeah, so
Yeah, and I
that's
mean,
another
go ahead. Sorry, I've interrupted you
thing.
enough.
Another thing is like you a lot of the times when you're playing an adventure game, you are not in the world that you live in or that character lives in. You're going on an adventure, so you're out of that world, you know. Whether it's King Graham being transported to another dimension, or if it's Rosa Blackwell being outside of her apartment and computer and books, you know. So it's that whole you've escaped your world. One thing I really liked about Gold Rush is, you know, you visit your parents' grave and, you know, you get a letter from your brother that sets the whole thing going. But like, you can go to work and like, you know, flirt with the secretary and quit your job before you go, or you can just walk out. Like you cannot go there at all. And it's really nice that it's got like this sort of this fact that you're going from a world that the guy lives in to this whole adventure. And It's got little touches like, and it's funny to talk about this for such an old game, but I think it's still relevant. Like, he starts up on his, he's got his work clothing on, he's got a he's respectable attire, and by the time you make it across the Oregon Trail, I guess it is, he's got a beard and he's got like these sort of
He's become a crazy
trail
old
clothes.
prospector.
Well, he hasn't become a crazy old prospector, but his character's attire represents the journey he's undertaken, even though
Sure.
we only see it in the sort of briefest of forms. Like, you got to make a few choices along the way, but mostly it's watching him go across a map and getting some interesting historical data
Right.
about stuff that happened, some of which is probably a little culturally insensitive now, but
Well, yeah, and also it's a Sierra game, so keep
right.
that in mind.
But yeah, so the fact that Jared Wilson has this connection to the world, I think, to me, made him a more interesting character than the other Sierra games. And the same with Conquest of Camelot. The other Sierra game that I like a lot is that finally I felt like a king in a Sierra game, because you start off with money. You go to like your treasury and you get your money, and then you go around and like people address you as though you were a king, which I don't think I ever saw happen to King Graham. But the games I've
Well,
played him as, he's either not a king yet or he's not in his own kingdom.
yeah, he's never in Dav. The only game that he's in Daventry is King's Quest 1, and he's just a knight at that point, so.
So he's only really king by title in any
Yeah.
of the stuff that we actually see him for.
But the weird thing, too, is that when he is wandering around Daventry, I think the only other human characters he meets are the woodcutter that gives him the bowl. So it's like Daventry's basically just there's one gnome, and that's it. A bunch of
Well, it's
monsters.
a fairy tale kingdom from the 80s.
Yeah, sure, but it's not much of a kingdom.
No, and he's not much of a king.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, so
Yeah.
it's I think they're the reason I like those two Sierra games so much, is that I actually felt some connection to this world, because
You really
Sierra
should
games for
play
me,
Conquest of the Longbow. I
I
keep
know.
telling
I've
you
got to,
this, but you really need to play it.
but yeah, Sierra games for me have this, they feel more about exploring a world, because you, like you say, you can't select dialogue options.
Right.
So you're never really exploring characters in the same way. And when
Well,
I felt a connection to that world, that made it better for me.
the thing with Conquest of the Longbow, as I mentioned to you earlier, is that yeah, you are playing as an established historical character, Robin Hood, and but there is the choice of how to play through the game. You can either be a noble outlaw, or you can just be a complete brute and all points in between. But the game is the game takes note of that, and at the end, if you've been a terrible outlaw, you get hanged like an outlaw.
Sure, well, same with
So,
Conquest of Camelot. If you pick
sure.
selfish options, you
Yeah,
fail.
exactly. If you play out a character for King Arthur, yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, Conquest of Camelot makes you feel like King Arthur. Conquest of the Longbow makes you feel like Robin Hood. So well done, Christy Marks, for that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I wanted to point out a couple of other instances before we wrap up of asshole behavior. One of the most infamous ones I can think of right off the top of my head is a game I didn't play, but you played some of and were disgusted by this moment. But the bit in Runaway 2 where you have to basically get a guy, a polar bear, to rape a guy. Like, what was the game's justification for doing that? What was the goal there?
Well, the goal was to get an item. Again, the guy had become an obstacle.
Right.
So, but again, I think it was, if I look at the environment surrounding Runaway 2, there hadn't been many comedy adventures for a long time. And I think you had people, it was the era of Jackass, where it's like, do the most shocking thing you can do, and that's the funniest thing, And, it was in incredibly bad taste. And, but I think most of Runaway that I've played was in bad taste, and trying to get some comedy out of that.
Well,
And people
yeah.
still try and do that,
The first Runaway is terrible. I played it. I mean, I enjoyed it the first time, I think, more because I hadn't played a modern adventure game in a while, and I just wanted to have
Well, there
some,
hadn't
like,
been many.
right. I wanted to have one that was like The Curse of Monkey Island and that was pretty.
Yeah.
But the second time I played through it, I was just like, I wanted to wring the guy's neck because he's so
Yeah,
annoying.
it really shocks me when I hear people that played Runaway and enjoyed it when it, because I remember playing it for the first time and just being like, no, to all of it. Literally, the background art's cool, but like other than that, I was like, oh no, yuck. Just to all, like, yeah, it's, but I think like you say, people were probably more forgiving of it because, a sort of a longing for ye good old days.
Yeah, I certainly was. But yeah, Brian wasn't
Anyway.
particularly an asshole through deeds in Runaway. He was just really annoying as a character because he said every single little detail of everything he was going to do.
Well, and he
And
starts off as an annoying nerd and he ends up as like an annoying sunglasses cool guy. Like,
yeah, and
there's no human between those two things.
no, there really isn't. And like the
And like the thing
whole
that they try to add humanity to him, or like, when he, like the whole deal with Gina, where he's just like instantly like changes character just because some girl that he met for 1 second's in character. I'm like, what is this, a 1940s film?
Yeah, pretty
No,
much.
actually,
Pretty bad.
1940 film's good. A 1950s film. No, they're pretty good. A 1960s
Ooh.
film, right. There we go.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, I hate that. Oh, that. Talking about being assholes, there's a film full of assholes. That's one film that I watched where I was like, every single character in this film deserves absolute misery. Oh, I could not stand that film.
know.
Anyway.
Anyway, so yeah, I guess the takeaway from this is try not to make your characters assholes unless it's something that will be addressed and have consequence.
Well,
Like, I
that's the
have
thing.
the,
You
yeah.
do anything you want, but know what you're doing.
Sure. And don't just, have some sort of justification for it and
Sure, and some sensitivity. Characters can't be funny. I don't th well, that no, can't is, but I don't find it funny just someone being an asshole. That's not funny to me, I genuinely found it funny when you nail Stan into the coffin in McKellen 2. Because I did not like Stan, because he talks too much. And he says annoying things, and he represents, the salesman type that we all deal with at some point and never like. So I genuinely found that a funny moment, because it was something I could relate to.
Sure. And it was something that
It wasn't
everyone
just.
fantasizes about doing, but wouldn't actually
Sure,
do.
and when he gets in that coffin, you're like, yes, he's gone. This is it. But yeah, it's funny because I sound like a guy on Twitter. But yeah, that was a moment that I genuinely found funny, whereas stuff in like Simon the Sorcerer, it's not that funny.
No.
Because the most annoying character, Simon, he's the one you want to nail in a coffin.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think you can do anything you want
Sure.
as long as, one, you're aware of what you're doing and know the more complex details surrounding it, and two, you have a sort of a sensitivity towards your audience when you're doing it.
I mean, I've had fun writing asshole responses in Lamplight City, but obviously, if you pick asshole responses, you're going to have consequences because that's the whole thing that, I want the game to respond to you as though, real life. And it's funny because I've had one person who tested the game told me that they were really caught off guard by the fact that because they had been conditioned in adventure games that, you don't get punished for being an asshole or giving the asshole-y responses, when they were punished, they were like, "Oh my God, I can't believe it." But then they were like, "Oh wait, that's cool, 'cause there was actually a response, like a just or not a justification. There was a consequence to my being a jerk." And I was like, "Good, I'm glad that came across." So, yeah.
I find that interesting because, obviously being someone that plays role-playing games, that whole, oh, make a choice, how do you want to play this character. This is what happens as a result, is kind of what role-playing games try and do.
Mm-hmm.
Not always successful, you know. I recently bounced off, again, Fallout 2, just because it's got a fairly immature take on, you know, cause and effect stuff. And, like, you know, you can be an asshole, but you can't be an asshole for any real... Like, without going into too much detail, there's a bit where you can be forced into a shotgun marriage, and it can be a same-sex marriage, which is extremely progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Then from there, you can pimp your spouse out.
Okay.
Which sounds like a fairly, you know, complicated, evil thing to do, but you pimp them out for a pittance, for like the tiniest bit of money ever. Uh-huh. And it's clearly the game being like, oh, ho, 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 sex is funny, you know. Like, right. They're not... They don't make you an evil character as a result of it. There's no real consequence of it.
Mm.
It's just, ha, 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 this is funny. So it could have been a great opportunity to do something really, really great, but instead it's like teenage boys wrote a game.
Right.
Which probably isn't that far off reality,
probably,
but you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's an example to me of a missed opportunity where a game could have done something sort of complex and with a great level of, like, not preachiness, because preachiness is never fun, but had something to say about it, and the thing that they had to say about it is like, oh, isn't being an asshole funny?
Mm-hmm.
Which, no. I think, if I remember correctly, the back of the box even, like, boasted about being able to do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong. I think, I don't know, I've never actually seen the box, but I think someone told me that the box actually boasts that. I should check on Moby Games before I start making. But yeah, so that's an example of, like, a role-playing game, you know, trying to do something and, like, not that funny. And sometimes it is funny. Like, Jagged Alliance 2, you can go on your little laptop in the game and send flowers to, like, the dictator queen. And she's, like, she has this horrible, like, she has this cutscene where she gets, you know, infuriated by this. That's funny to me because it's a much more sensitive within the context of the world.
Sure.
You know, you're mocking someone who deserves to be mocked, not some poor hapless person that you've been bundled up with, and now you're like, you're pimping them out for a pittance.
Right.
Anyway.
Pimp
but yeah,
my
I
bride.
I think when we can start to get to that point where we're crossing the line between role-playing game, and I don't mean a dungeon crawler, I mean role-playing games, and like... and adventure games. That's when we'll start, like, you know, character development, you know, choice making, consequences, that sort of stuff, which, you know, both of us have tried to work towards in our work, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's tough to just nail it straight away. It's not something you get right first time, but
definitely
I definitely think that's something to aspire towards.
Yeah. Good. Well, that's some good development right there, you asshole. I don't know. I'm sorry. That was terrible. I was trying to bring it all together, but it didn't work. Anyway.
Instead, you tore us apart.
I did. Just like love. 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 Oh, God. When I start singing Joy Division, that's when you know it's time to end the podcast. Goodbye.
That was about 20 episodes ago. Bye.
No. Wait, no, I forgot to do all the things.
Oh, yeah. At Grunus
underscore.
And together.
We are at BCT underscore podcast. All right, cool.
Whocares.com.
Who cares? Yeah, bye.